6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
You want the best for your child. K-12 can help them gain the skills they need to reach their full potential while giving you the support you need to get them there. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Their state-certified teachers make online learning interactive and engaging, allowing your child to learn at their pace from the safety of home. Join the more than 3 million families who have chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.
Hey guys, it's Albert. We got a great show for you coming this week. We got Gresham for the takeaways. We got a special guest that's going to help preview this coming weekend and the way this weekend's going to work in the NFL with cutdowns, with trades. And then as always, we wrap things up with a six-pack of your questions. Let's go. All right, welcome into the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer. We are 8 days away from the NFL season opener. The Houston Texans will travel to Kansas City to play the Chiefs at Arrowhead. It's hard to believe we're here. I think there were points in June and July when the virus was spiking in certain parts of the country, and the NFL and NFLPA were fighting through how to make the protocols work, that people didn't think that this was going to happen. But it looks like we're going to get football. Everything's gone, I think, way better than most people expected through training camp when it comes to the virus. And now we are on the doorstep of the NFL season. I can't wait to start talking about it. We got a great guest coming for you. I'm bringing him in because specific to this week, I think he's gonna be a fascinating guy to talk to. We've got your questions in the mailbag. We're going to start, as we always do, with the takeaways. And that means I'm bringing in my good friend, Andrew Gresh III. I did not know you were the third, actually, Gresh. I'm looking at the Zoom screen now, and I don't know why I haven't noticed that before, but it's Andrew Gresh III.
Yeah, I had to use the formalities there for whatever reason when I signed up. But apparently there you can change it. But listen, we're Zooming. That's about enough technology for us.
Well, I'm actually Emily Breer. That's my wife on the Zoom. So that's how I come up. All right, my first takeaway for this week, Gresh. I think one of the bigger news stories of the last few days, not that it was unexpected. I mean, this guy has been available for about a year. On the trade market, but the Jaguars officially cut the cord with Leonard Fournette. And how about I tell you a story here, Gresh? How about I give you a little information on how all of this happened? Okay, so if you want to go back to the end of the 2016 season in Jacksonville, the Jaguars make the decision that they're going to fire Gus Bradley. That happened, I believe, with maybe 2 or 3 weeks left in the season. They launched their coaching search. They bring in a lot of big names. They didn't know that Tom Coughlin was going to come in as the EVP yet. And a lot of the guys who came through there, Kyle Shanahan, Josh McDaniels, had told them you have to move on from Blake Bortles, you know, because that's what coaches do in these interviews. What would you do? Well, I would move on from Blake Bortles. They kept hearing it over and over again from different people. One of the reasons why Doug Marrone was able to hang on to that job after being the interim coach at the end of that year was because he was pragmatic. He went in there and said, you know what? I think we can make it work with Blake. But end of the day, they wind up hiring Doug Marrone, pairing him with Tom Coughlin and Dave Caldwell, the general manager, and they're going forward with Blake Bortles, okay? So then they turn around, and think about this, Gresh. They turn around and they start planning for the 2017 season. Well, then after doubling down on that quarterback that they took third overall in 2014, what do? They lay out a plan where they say, we're going to take the ball out of his hands now. We're going to go ball control. We're going to look... And we're going to make sure that we minimize the impact that the quarterback has in the game. So through that plan, A, they're not really looking or taking seriously the idea of taking a quarterback in the top 10 in 2017. And B, they're looking for a specific player to match up what they need right at that moment, right? So what they needed right at that moment, Leonard Fournette matched up with that. Who'd they pass on?
Christian McCaffrey,
right? Okay, so they looked at the immediate need. How do we minimize the quarterback? All right, but since you doubled down on the quarterback in the first place, what does that also mean? That means you didn't consider Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson. I don't want to kill them for that because a lot of teams passed on those two guys, right? And there are a lot of good franchises that pass on those two guys.
Mm-hmm.
But you start to see then kind of the domino effect of the decision-making here where it worked for a year. Like, that's the thing. It worked for a year. For a year, Leonard Fournette helped them be what they needed to be, and they got all the way to the AFC Championship game. And maybe we're looking at this differently if they were able to hold on to that lead in Foxborough on that Sunday afternoon in January of 2018. That's just 31 months ago. Basically, that team has since been gutted. I mean, you look on the defensive side of the ball, Jalen Ramsey, A.J. Boye, Telvin Smith, Paul Posluszny, Malik Jackson, Calais Campbell, Dante Fowler, all of these guys, now Yannick Ngakoue, all of these guys are gone. You don't have your quarterback position, you don't have your quarterback question answered. You know, doubling down on Blake Bortles caused you to turn around and overspend on Nick Foles. And the window that you had is now closed. Your thoughts, Gresh, on all of that, all of what I just gave you and the decision making house.
They're the classic example of having a plan and then not being patient enough to be able to carry it out. And I know that it came at a time when Tom Coughlin ended up leaving the organization, but they were pretty damn good in 2017, and it looked like they were going to be on their way. And as soon as they started to slide backwards a little bit, it's, well, let's bail from the plan. Let's go in a different direction. And they also came to realize that, as the great thespian of cartoon Bugs Bunny once said, you know, oh, I saw me a Miragi. They also saw themselves a couple of Miragis into thinking that the quarterback spot was set and that they could also go without thinking about how the blend's got to work in the locker room. I mean, mm-hmm. Bert, it's one of two things. They either drafted some guys who ultimately turned selfish and wanted to go get theirs and they didn't care where they went and got it, like Jalen Ramsey, or it's not a great organization to be a part of and the guys don't have faith in the team and they want to get the hell out of there. Like, why do so many guys seem to want to leave that organization? And I can't figure out whether they don't think they're going to get paid or they think they can go get paid somewhere else where they have a better opportunity to win. Something doesn't add up there. And I got a lot of respect for the cons. You know, I'm a big fan of Tony Khan because I think he's a different kind of thinker. But whatever they've been thinking about the past eight drafts hadn't worked worth a hill of beans for him.
I think, you know, but I think what you're talking about, right? Like, I think there's different guys on different timelines there. I think that's part of the problem.
Yeah.
As you brought in, so you have Dave Caldwell, who's been the general manager there for 8 years. You brought in Doug Marrone, who didn't have a lot of background with Caldwell and comes from a different background than Caldwell does. And then over the top, you had Tom Coughlin, who was sort of setting the tone for the entire organization, but was a very short-term thinker in part because of his age, mm-hmm. right? So then you do everything you can to try to make it work in the short term because you know to sell the program that you're giving the players because it's a tough program. You know you're going to have to get results right away. And so they got the results right away. But then when you're not succeeding the way that they succeeded that first year, what happens? Now all of a sudden the players start to look around like, why are we doing up downs? Why are we practicing in the middle of the day in August? Like, why are we doing all of this? And eventually, I think that that's sort of what happened, is eventually, you know, those questions, when you win, and we've seen this in New England, when you win, it's, you can run the program that way because you've got the ultimate leverage. You can say, look at the trophy case. If you aren't winning, you know what a lot of guys are going to look at? They're going to say, like, I haven't done up-down since high school. Why am I doing them now?
Right.
You know, so I just think that that's sort of the push and pull there. My main takeaway is how patchwork the organization's been and how you got one guy, you know, making calls over here who's got this agenda, this guy over here who's making calls who's had this agenda. I think the other big thing here too, Gresh, is, I mean, you can seriously compound a mistake by sticking with that mistake.
Right.
And they made a mistake on Blake Bortles. That much has been determined in 2014. And they needed to know that they should have, after having him in the building for 3 years, had a good idea that we did not get this one right. And we need to do something about it. They should have known that in 2017. Instead, they decided to stay the course with Bortles, which, I mean, like, look, if you have Watson or Mahomes now, and again, I don't want to kill him for that because other teams passing him too. Maybe you're not as successful right away, but you're setting yourself up to have longer term success. And so you miss out on those guys because you're so focused on the here and now, and be focusing on the here and now forced you to maybe not force you, but influenced you to hold on to something you shouldn't have held on to. And then doing that created multiple mistakes. One, taking Fournette over McCaffrey, and two, passing on Watson and Mahomes.
Here's the other thing about Jacksonville that's an interesting study. You know, there are so many old school personnel guys who you and I would guarantee would say, whoa, you know, if you don't have a quarterback, you better take one high, better take one high, better take one high. You still need to take the right one high in the draft. And Blake Bortles is a great example of that. And then there is the whole, you can't take a running back high. Well, some might look at Len Fournette and say, there's the shining example of why you can't. Then again, the guy drafted just behind him is the shining example of the kind of overall superstar you can get if you do take a running back in the top 10. Look at Barkley, look at McCaffrey. Those are two big-time weapons on their team. I'm not saying you can't find them elsewhere, but if you are going to draft those dudes up high, you need to know, in my opinion, that you're going to get 5 years out of them. And then maybe have 1 year on a franchise tag, and there's your half decade with a running back, and you've run him into the ground, and then you move on. And I think Fournette's got tread on the tires. Look, I don't know about you, and I know you didn't ask me this, but you know, I wonder if Baltimore would be interested, because having Leonard Fournette in that power running offense just seems to be too seamless a fit.
I like their rival. How about Pittsburgh? Ooh. Like, pair him with James Conner. I mean, I guess I'm probably dating myself here, but don't you sort of get shades of like Jerome Bettis? Do you remember like Jerome Bettis when at the end with the Rams, he was like out of shape
yep.
and people thought like he's overrated. He'd gotten off to a quick start in his career. But like there was just this feeling that like that was a wasted pick. The Rams taking him as high as they took him, that was a wasted pick. And he got a change of scenery and, you know, what like look what happened. You know, and like going to a good organization like that, I mean, look what happened. So, I mean, I think the Steelers could be somebody who could look at him and say, James Conner's in a contract year and he's had some injury issues. Maybe we give ourselves another layer of depth there. And by the time everybody listens to this podcast, we're going to know whether or not he's been picked up on waivers. So you have that. And then I think for Fournette, it would be great to go to a position place like that. I think if you're Fournette, you want to go to a stable organization where you can go and sort of rehabilitate your stock.
Sure. Go get your 150 carries at about five and a half yards a rip on a good team and go get yourself, you know, 750, 800 yards, something like that. Score maybe 8-9 touchdowns and, you know, not only revitalize your career, but kind of show your wares in another place. You know, we forget because he was drafted so high. I think his signing bonus was just a little north of $17 million. Not that he doesn't want more money, don't get me wrong, but he's not one of these running backs who's out there, you know, singing for his supper or still looking for the big payday relative to what some of these running backs are being paid. Maybe Fournette waits to be a little choosy or teams say, why don't you come in after week one? And then when we play the whole, you know, guaranteed contract game.
Again, that's if he clears waivers, which we don't know, and you will know by the time this podcast drops.
I'm going to say he clears waivers.
Because I think he might. I think there's a good chance. I think there's a chance of it, too, just because the number is high. It's over $4 million. Yeah. Right. Okay, takeaway number two. So another move by the Jaguars this weekend. They trade Yannick Ngakoue to the Minnesota Vikings for a second-round pick in 2021. A fifth rounder that can become a fourth rounder or a third rounder in 2022. The Vikings cannot sign Yannick long-term because he was franchised and you're past the franchise tag deadline to do a long-term deal. And if you want to know how bad things were between Yannick Ngakoue and the Jaguars, here's your evidence, Gresh. He took almost $6 million less to go to the Minnesota Vikings, which not only affects him this year, but it also is going to affect his franchise tag number next year. So he's basically taking what could be a two-year pay cut to get the hell out of Jacksonville and to go to Minnesota. My takeaway from this is I love this for the Vikings. Look, you look at the age of the age of the guys in their roster, right? Adam Thielen's in his 30s, Kyle Rudolph's in his 30s, Harrison Smith's in his 30s, Eric Kendricks and Anthony Barr, I believe, are both 28. You know, this gives you a 25-year-old guy who you can pair with your other 25-year-old pass rusher, Danielle Hunter. It gives them a replacement for Everson Griffin. This team is very much in a win-now spot. There are some guys who are in contract years like Dalvin Cook. For the Vikings, I think, you know, you look at the makeup of where they're at, I'm all for this. I mean, I think if you're the Vikings, you got to go for it. And I think that this is the time to do it. And I think going and getting somebody like Yannick to put opposite, even though Yannick's not perfect as a player, not great against the run, being able to put him opposite Danielle Hunter gives you some real juice on defense.
Isn't it interesting that the Vikings, for about a third year here in a row, Bert, it feels like there's that team every year where they're the go-for-it team that made short-term moves, right? We ended up seeing it when they went for Kirk Cousins. It was originally a three-year deal, right? Here's the window. We got our quarterback. Let's go try to win this thing. It feels like Minnesota is perpetually that team here for the past couple of years. I like Yannick Ngakoue a lot. I didn't like the way he kind of handled things in terms of, you know, maybe Jacksonville is complicit in their own demise from this end in terms of setting guys up to ultimately try to shoot their way out of town. If other people do it, you know, why shouldn't Ngakoue? And he pretty much did that. That said, man, if Minnesota doesn't get it done this year, then at what point do you look at it and say, okay, we've done every little tweak that we can here. Why didn't this work? This almost feels like, to me, another kind of make or break move from the Minnesota Vikings in terms of them trying to do things the way they have been and going to win a Super Bowl. Because as we know, you know, the cap's probably going to go down a little bit or won't expand anywhere near as much as they thought. So big time free agents. I mean, you know, look, Dalvin Cook has one great year. Look out. That salary could explode into a neighborhood where Minnesota maybe can't keep the player.
And it's, you know, and they've been perpetually like one of these teams. The Saints are this way too, where they've the Chiefs are another one where they've been able to like magically make the cap work, you know, like every year they're kicking the can down the road. And so, you know, again, like next year, all right, like now Yannick's up, Dalvin Cook's up. What do you do at left tackle with Riley Reiff? You just restructured him. And as you said, the cap is going down. I just like it because I just think that they're in that sweet spot, and that core of players that they have is not getting any younger. And eventually, Kyle Rudolph's going to fall off, and eventually, Adam Thielen's going to fall off, and eventually, Harrison Smith's going to fall off. And I just, you know, I've got questions about where they're at corner. I've got questions about where they're at on the offensive line. They're going to need some young players to play really well. Bradbury on the offensive line, Gladney in the secondary. But, I mean, like just as far as where they are and when they're actually going to have to rip the Band-Aid off and rebuild, I don't mind diving in on a go-for-it move, especially, Gresh, when you don't have to give up a first-round pick to do it.
Yeah, that's there's no question the compensation worked. I guess it also goes to show kind of where the Ngakoue market was. And, again, you know, I hate to keep sound like I'm banging away on the old Jacksonville organization here. However, you know, in dealing with them, maybe they know there really wasn't a market and just let that market calm down. Because think about it, if Minnesota is as good as they think they can be, you know, what are we looking at? 59, 60, 61st pick in the draft or something.
Right. And that's part of it too, right? It's how good you think you're going to be. Absolutely. All right. My third takeaway, Joe Mixon this week signs a 4-year, $48 million deal. Alvin Kamara, for the first time, I'd say he's got that contract negotiation's gotten a little sideways. I'm going to throw Dalvin Cook's name in there too. These are big decisions. You know, there was a bumper crop of running backs in 2017. We've talked about Fournette. McCaffrey's kind of the new standard bearer. And, you know, like My take on this, Gresh, is that every one of these situations is a little different. And McCaffrey gets paid, I think, at $16 million per, because I think he's exactly what Matt Rhule is looking for. And so one thing you can do when you're a new coach somewhere is you can go in and say, that guy over there, that guy who's doing everything, you know, the right way, that's the guy we reward. So you send a message to your locker room, and he's a versatile sort of player that, you know, you can do a lot of different things with. Mixon, I think you pay him because you want to have that support system for your young quarterback, sort of like what Todd Gurley was for Jared Goff early on, sort of like what Zeke Elliott was for Dak Prescott early on. Kamara is perfect for Sean Payton's offense. Dalvin Cook's the one to me where it's like, he's got some injury history. Like, we have a bunch of guys we have to pay. He's the one. So my takeaway here is sort of a broad one when it comes to the question of paying running backs. I think they're case by case. And I know it's tough to do it because they can fall off the table. We saw it with Gurley, of course, in LA. We'll see what happens with Zeke Elliott in Dallas. But I think each of them is sort of case by case. And I don't blame any of these guys for conducting a wildcat strike to go and get paid either, by the way. Because if you got to do that, God bless you. At that position, you don't have very much time to get your money.
Yeah, I would normally I'm against those kind of, like I said, the old wildcat strike. But I'm with you on that in terms of the running back spot. You mentioned case by case. Let's add another layer to it, because at your core, Bert, I believe you're completely right. If the Kansas City Chiefs, if they don't want to pay a running back, as long as Patrick Mahomes is signed, nobody cares.
Right.
You know, let's not be naive here. Why did Christian McCaffrey also get his extension, and when did he get it? After Cam Newton left the organization, new coach comes in. What's the easiest way to make sure that the fan base knows that the existing superstar isn't going to get shipped out of town the way the guy, you know, the last decade long superstar who was there just left? It's to turn around and sign that guy. So there's a little bit of also the political goodwill there as well to counteract Cam leaving town. In terms of Alvin Kamara, you know, he's such a fascinating study, because Sean Payton is such a bright offensive mind. He knows that they can use that guy like a wide receiver. You know, it's funny. I think it's just a tweak in the offense in terms of, you know, the way they move Kamara around and get him matchups. It's akin to what they did with Jimmy Graham before.
Right. That's what I was. That's exactly what I was going to say. Is like, he's the running back version of Jimmy Graham.
Exactly right.
And you know what else he is? I think he's what. You remember who Sean Payton's first draft pick was in New Orleans?
No, I don't.
Reggie Bush. So it's what I think he had in mind. Like, Alvin Kamara is what Sean Payton was trying to get when he drafted Reggie Bush, right?
That's a good point. Yep.
Like, I think, and I think that position is different in that offense, you know? Like, now he has had more traditional backs. Mark Ingram was one, but he likes to have guys that are sort of positionless, you know? Like, he'd line up Marcus Colston. He's another example of it as a slot receiver. You know what I mean? Like, so Sean Payton plays offense a different way, and he sort of looks at the five skill position players. It's like, when I break the huddle, I don't want you to know where those guys are going. And Alvin Kamara is perfect for that.
But then did we just make the argument then against Alvin Kamara? Because you have a head coach who said, okay, I had that matchup with a tight end. Now I got this matchup with a running back. But here's how I'll change the offense. And he figured it out. And they've still been really productive. So is it not necessarily where the weapon is on the field? It's that you have that weapon to play with to work everyone else off of.
So you're saying you don't pay him because –
because you've look, when it, to the point to where they got to Jimmy Graham, where it was like, dude, we're not paying you this. Come on, get out of here. And they let him go. They just reinvented the offense. But the move piece went from being a tight end to being a running back.
Yeah.
Well, what if it ends up going back to being a tight end again?
Right. It gives you more options. Well, what you're saying is it gives you more options to replace him if you need to.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is definitely a fair way to look at it. They traditionally haven't paid a lot of skill players. Now, they paid Mike Thomas, you know, who's, I think, the best receiver in football. But they traditionally have not paid their skill players as consistent. They pay their linemen. And I think part of that is what you're talking about, that Sean thinks he can make it work. You know, to me, it's like, I just think Kamara is such a unique talent and different. And I think it's, again, like Kamara, I think Kamara and McCaffrey are a little, those two are a little different than, I think it's hard to classify them just as running backs. Mixon and Cook are a little bit more traditional running backs, but still give you value catching the ball, you know? So I think all four of them, all four of these guys we're talking about, I think kind of fit in that 21st century running back. Like they're not Fournette. Like Fournette was like an old school running back. Like these four guys are all 21st century running backs, which I think gives them a little bit longer shelf life. But I do think you have to look at them situationally. So maybe you're right. Maybe Peyton looks at it and says, I can replace Kamara. But I can tell you what, like you look at the market now and you look at what McCaffrey got and you look at what Mixon got, it's pretty well defined. I mean, I think, you know, you're probably at the very least going to have to come in the middle of those two at least like 14, 15, if you're the Saints.
Mm. Ooh, stiff.
Yeah. But you know what? George Kittle cost $15 million. I thought that was a bargain because you're paying your top receivers 22, 21. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I think you could make the argument that Kamara is to the Saints every bit what Julio Jones is to the Falcons. I think you can actually make that argument. All right. Takeaway number four. We're going to have a guest on a little later who kind of kicked the hornet's nest a little bit this week, and there's led to speculation that Dabo Swinney could wind up as the next head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars with his young quarterback coming with him to Northern Florida. So here's my takeaway.
That's great.
I think Dabo would be a really good NFL head coach. And I think the reason why, he's capable of getting buy-in from guys. And I think that's the most underrated thing. Like, we all look at like offensive geniuses and you want to have your play call, blah, 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 blah. What's Matt Rhule good at?
He was a defensive guy, wasn't he?
He was an offensive guy, but no one knows that. He was like he was like when he was with the Giants, he was like an assistant offensive line coach.
Yeah,
no
every time I think of Matt Rhule and Temple, I think of his defense.
Right, and like and so he went to Carolina. What did he do? He brought in Joe Brady with him to run his offense, right? And he's got Phil Snow, who's been with him forever as his defensive coordinator. Point being, like, Matt Rhule is like a program leader, and that's what Dabo is, right? Dabo is a program leader who has assistants who are loyal to him. Brent Venables has been with him forever. On the offensive side, Tony Elliott's been with him forever. I don't know, Gresh. I know some people are going to look at Dabo and say, well, you know, he's a rah-rah college head coach. You know who else they said that about 10 years ago?
Pete Carroll. Yeah. I was one of them.
I mean, look, a lot of this is going to come down to getting the quarterback. But if you're Dabo Swinney and you had it in your mind, I at some point want to give the NFL a shot, and Jacksonville winds up with the number one pick and offers you the job, that'd be pretty tough to pass up, wouldn't it? Because then you can take your NFL shot with Trevor Lawrence.
Let me tell you something, Albert Breer. I live in Clemson, South Carolina, and if I ever see your Buckeye-loving ass down here suggesting that my Dabo is going to go to North Florida, which isn't even defined by Florida's North Florida, if I ever see you at Rick Irwin's restaurant, I'm going to come up and smack you upside the head for a suggestion that my Lord and Savior Dabo is leaving. I'll tell you something. That is a juicy conspiracy theory. And given the way we've talked about the Jacksonville Jaguars to this point, Bert, it is entirely plausible that they would do something like that.
That would be a fun one. That would absolutely be a fun one. Okay, last takeaway. Really quick, the NFL and NFLPA did a data dump on Tuesday afternoon. I'll run you through it really quick, Gresh. Between August 21st and 29th, that's 9 days, 58,621 tests administered to 8,739 people. 23,279 of those tests were to 2,747 players. Only four positives in that group. 35,342 tests were given to 5,992 other personnel, and six of those personnel tested positive. So 10 positive tests, which is actually a little bit of an uptick from the last period when they released the data. This is overwhelmingly good news. And again, like my big takeaway here, and we can talk about the Big Ten here too if you want. Look, the daily testing is the freaking key to everything. Daily testing is the key to everything because that allows you, because here's the thing, Gresh. COVID can't spread if you don't let COVID into the building, right? And if you have daily testing, there's a good chance you're not letting COVID into the building. And so I just think, you know, I think not just for the NFL, for the Big Ten potentially, if they can get a daily testing, which it looks like the president might actually help them do. I think for all of us, you know, it's almost like you look at this and like, cheap, accessible testing might be the key to everything. You know, I had a buddy of mine who, and I may have said this to you on last week's show, but, you know, we were talking about it and, you know, I asked him like, and he's a football coach. And I was like, what do you think of, you know, what the NFL is doing? And he's like, well, I've been watching on Hard Knocks. And he's like, I think the NFL should be running the country. And he was joking, but like, I mean, I do think like some of the stuff that they're doing and some of the success that they've had applies to some of the things that we're going to need to do to get back on our feet as a country.
Yeah. And look, I think the early part of this testing phase couldn't have gone better for the NFL, considering there were a lot of people who were comparing preseason camps to the bubbles that are going on in the NHL and the NBA and saying, oh, okay, it's not going to work. And what we haven't seen are players leaving the facility at night, going out and being irresponsible, and then going out and catching something. Now, let's also remember, there are less places for them to go to. There aren't as many shoe shows, right, gin joints, all that kind of stuff. But that said, they're still going to be going out. And, you know, do they have a family member that ends up catching it? So, you know, for this first phase, good job so far. Now is going to come the real test of not the testing system itself, Bert, but the players now.
Yeah.
As we start to head towards the regular season and you get into that normal algorithm of here's my week, here's my family life, your kids are going to school. This is where life starts to blend in with football. They've gotten off to an amazing start, and this is exactly what the NFL needed to calm everyone down. Now it's up to the players to follow through and make sure they're not, as you said, you don't bring it into the facility, you got nothing to worry about.
And here's what I really like about it. This would be the last thing for me on this. What I really like about it is I think so much of our problem as a country in handling this whole thing has been this polarization, I think, that started politically but seeped into everything. And so on one side of this, and there shouldn't be two sides to handling a virus, but on one side of it, it's lock the door, throw away the key, we're never going outside again. On the other side, it's, well, I'm going to live my life. What about my rights? Like, I'm going to go like Clint Eastwood into the grocery store without a mask on, and screw you if you're wearing a mask. Like, that's how we got in this mess, is that it's just, we become so polarized that way. And what I appreciate about what the NFL has done is that they've sought pragmatic solutions to everything. And it's not like, I'm not going to wear a mask. It's, we're going to take every precaution we possibly can. We still know it might not work, but we're going to take every precaution that we possibly can to try and get it right and be vigilant about it and do everything that we possibly can to try and get a season played. And the results so far are undeniable.
Okay. So those numbers you read earlier, are you a part of that? Some from a Breer Camp Tour 2020?
No, I'm not actually. So I was tier three. So you can go tier two. I just thought, so the problem with that would have been if you're media and you go tier two, you have to go through the same entry protocols that the players do. So I basically would have had to sit in like the courtyard of the Spring Hill Suites down the street for a few days while I was being tested to get cleared to become tier two. So basically what they did for me was I would drive in. In the morning, they obviously knew I was coming. So I would get a text from the team, whatever team it was. And then I would click on a link and it would give me a questionnaire. And then for most of the teams, then they would text you or send you or email you at like a green check mark, right? So you had to show the green check mark when you drove into the facility, and then they would take your temperature when you went into the facility, and that was pretty much it. And you weren't really allowed around anybody anyway.
Very interesting. That is a very interesting look. Because as you're reading those numbers, I'm like, wait a minute, Do you count? Are you a part of those people? But tier three, it's like it's the status you it's unlike an airline with the airlines like you're medallion member or whatever.
I'm on the other side of the velvet rope.
Yeah, you want to you want to be tier one is the most amount of testing, and right now you don't want to be tier one. So
that's right.
When you're
that's right.
You know, when you're getting ready to fly across the country at some point, you know, this season, God willing, then you'll want to be tier one status.
If I was tier one, that would mean I was like a player, and I don't think anybody would want to see that. So
That is a crock. There are a lot of people who would want to see that. Are you kidding me? Do you know how many clicks you get on the mmqb.com if you suit it up? I mean,
The question would be whether or not I would be able to tell the story of the experience afterwards. I'm not sure.
Listen, bro, I'm here to spin your tail for you, right? Just give me some photos and I'll fill in the rest of the narrative that is needed.
That'd probably be a good obituary you'd write for me, I'm sure.
Oh, are you kidding me? The eulogy would be amazing. Apologies to the people in Jacksonville for being real about their organization, but hopefully onward and upward.
All right. That is Andrew the Third. Andrew the Third, thank you very much. And we will get to our special guest right after this. All right, now we're going to welcome in a guy who I go pretty far back with, and a guy I actually have like a really different connection to. I'm actually, for those who don't know, a former sports editor of a newspaper in Massachusetts called the Needham Times. Our guest here is actually from Needham, Massachusetts, and I want to make sure I get this right, Mike, a former Needham Times paperboy. After that, he actually went on to be the Jets general manager and the Dolphins EVP of football operations. He's Mike Tannenbaum. Mike, I got that right?
Absolutely. And just so we can set the record abundantly straight, I got paid 0.25 cents to deliver the Needham Times when I was in fifth grade. And proudly, Albert, I graduated to delivering the Boston Globe when I was in the sixth grade. Those were actually the first two jobs I had. So that deep-rooted connection with you will stay with me forever, going all the way back to my roots of Needham, Massachusetts.
I made slightly more than that when I was working at the Needham Times, but not a whole lot more. all right, so the reason we wanted to have Mike on this week, well, first, I do want to get to this because we talked about this off the top of the show, and I just thought it was there's a lot there in what you said earlier the week. I think you said it on Get Up. Mike, of course, works at ESPN now. And you said you mentioned Dabo Swinney as a potential candidate eventually to go to a place like Jacksonville. And I just want to ask you, because you've been part of these processes in the past, like how you would look at Dabo as a head coaching candidate.
So, you know, Albert, first of all, like talking to some of the teams that have recently done head coaching searches, his name has actually been on lists as somebody that I know teams are currently or have, I should say, evaluated. And if you're thinking about a search, you're certainly going to have a bigger picture list. And he's been compared to people that I've talked to Pete Carroll, a high energy problem solving type of guy. And I'm just saying that. And look, I like Doug Marone a lot. I hope they do really well this year. But within the context of within 24 hours losing both Yannick Ngakoue as well as Leonard Fournette, that they very conceivably could have the first pick overall, Albert. And if they did, if Dabo Swinney ever did want to go to the pros, this would be the perfect storm.
Yeah, and I sort of made that point too. Like so much of it, like if you're Dabo and you're like, if like I'm going to take a shot at it at some point, if that's in the back of his head, and so much of your success in the NFL boils down to the quarterback, and you know you're going to be able to walk into that job with the quarterback that you've had, who happens to be a generational talent, that would be a lot to pass up, right? If you're Dabo, I would think.
100%, Albert, because again, like it really checks every box, right? You want a place that's very desirable for players to want to go. Jacksonville is a place where they practice and play on grass, which is important to players. There's no state income tax. The weather is obviously great. It's not far from Clemson. They have a ton of draft choices, and they have a lot of cap room moving forward. So if you're ever going to do it, to go there with Trevor Lawrence, who arguably is the best prospect to come out since Andrew Luck, again, it's an if, but if it's in the back of Dabo Sweeney's mind, I just can't imagine a scenario being better than going to Jacksonville with Trevor Lawrence if they indeed have the first pick.
Okay, that's not why we brought Mike on, but just because you said earlier in the week, Mike, I definitely wanted to get to it. We'll pivot now to the real reason that I thought it was a good time to bring you in here. And to me, it's this, obviously, in your former life, this was such a big week. And you hear names kind of getting dangled out there trade-wise. And, you know, obviously, you're looking at your own roster and trying to figure out, who am I going to keep? Who am I going to try to sneak through the practice squad? So I guess I'd just start with this. You know, just observing what's happened in the league over the last 5 weeks since camp started, knowing what the rules are going to be, knowing like what the climate in the country is and how we don't know what's ahead. How do you think this week's going to be different for a general manager versus what cutdown week normally is?
Yeah, just talking to a couple teams around the league, what's really hard is evaluating your own, knowing who to keep. It's really hard to evaluate what you have. And unfortunately, we're going to miss out on some incredible stories of the, you know, countless undrafted free agents who have made it year in and year out that, you know, will just be misevaluated. And we're going to see players get claimed that with these expanded practice squads, Albert, that teams would ideally like to keep. And I think what we're going to see, at least initially, more veterans make it because they'll know that we'll see some younger players become available, and I think the smart teams will take advantage of that, and they'll maybe be a little bit more aggressive on the claim come Saturday night.
Can you remember like an example of whether it was a player on your own team that you learned about in a preseason game, or a player on maybe somebody else's team that you watched in a preseason game, as like maybe an example of how important those were to the process and maybe what all these teams are losing and not having the preseason games?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many notable ones over the years, but, you know, guys like Jay Ajayi that were, you know, later round picks that really flashed in games, or even, you know, maybe more famously Victor Cruz, you know, that goes all the way back to Hard Knocks. But Victor Cruz was somebody from my alma mater, UMass, who was very unheralded, and the New York Giants signed him because he was local to them. He had an unbelievable game when we were at the Jets, and obviously Victor Cruz, the rest is history. You know, there's just so many examples over the years of those types of guys, from Wes Welker, Wayne Corbett, you know, talked about, you know, Wayne Corbett wouldn't have had the career he had without the benefit of preseason games. So unfortunately, we're going to lose out on some of those great stories.
What do you think general managers are doing right now to try to figure out like who they might want to put a claim in on the waiver wire? Because again, like you said, like you're sort of flying blind here. So if you're in charge of a team right now, what are you doing to try to prepare for the just flood of players that are suddenly going to hit the wire on Saturday afternoon?
Yeah, I think what we're seeing right now, basically, Albert, is they're going back and looking at a lot of college tape just to be as thorough as possible. And that's really the only thing you could go off of. So you're looking for guys that maybe were hurt. You were looking at guys that maybe slipped through the cracks on draft day for whatever reason. Under scouted, transferred, injury, suspensions. Those are typically, and I remember Coach Parcells had a great expression, Albert, this time of year, which is when you're looking to develop a player, they should have a developmental attribute, meaning it could be size, it could be speed, but you want something that you can develop. And I think that's what teams will be looking for. And it's going to be, you know, come Saturday night into Sunday morning, the wild, wild west.
So do you think it's going to be like over the couple days after that? Like, I mean, I would think then, like, because you are flying blind like that, maybe you get a lemon. You know what I mean? Like, and I hate to refer to a person that way, but you get something that you don't think, like, it's not what you thought it was going to be. So maybe there's like just a ton of roster turnover Saturday, Sunday, Monday, like something like that, like where teams are bringing in guys and then maybe this guy or that guy isn't quite what they thought he'd be, and then he's thrown back on the waiver wire.
Yeah, and I think what we're going to see, Albert, is and there's really nothing wrong with like roster turnover this time of year. And typically, like, what the conversation with coaching staffs are is like, look, you handle players 1 through 46. And then after that, we'll handle the rest and let us, you know, go through. And, you know, you'll also see possibly, you know, a claim, a failed physical. You'll see a trade conditions not work out. You'll see a lot of transactions over the next, you know, really until next Tuesday. And that's okay. You really try to split the building into getting ready for opening day and then the back half of the roster.
How do you think if you were a GM right now, you'd be preparing for the COVID thing? Like, do you think it would affect who you kept? Do you think it would affect, like, you know, kind of how you handle your practice squad? Obviously, it's bigger this year as a result of all of this. How do you think that just the circumstances we're all in as a country would affect the way that you would handle it the next few days?
I think it's I would want to have as many veteran players on short lists as possible. But knowing that, you know, it's not going to be perfect, but I think you're going to see veterans, you know, being asked to stay in cities for, you know, several weeks, let's say, or to be, you know, available on a moment's notice. You know, the quarterback position in particular is going to be really interesting. I think we're going to see veteran quarterbacks, like go back to the Jets last year with the David Faileses of the world. Maybe those guys are now on practice squads. So there's a lot that could happen between now and, again, you know, a week from Thursday when the season begins. And I think the quarterback position in particular will be interesting, where we may see, you know, 10 and 11 year vets. Let's a guy like a Josh McCown, for example, be asked to be on a practice squad. Now, they may or may not accept that, Albert, in terms of what they feel is in their best interest. But I think the quarterback position in particular is something we should watch carefully.
Is that like pretty common that you would ask a guy to stay in a city? Like, have you done that before where you would say, cut a guy, but say, like, listen, like, we may need you in a couple of weeks. So if you could sit tight, like, you know, it would really help us. Is that common, or would that be something that'd be a tweak this year?
I think it's not totally outside the norm. You know, obviously players can go wherever they want. And certainly, you know, some cities are more locations, you know, destination cities than others. But I think you will see that, especially this year. Or I think what you're going to see is like, hey, make sure you're in shape, because when we're calling, it could be on Friday and you're playing on Sunday. And the worst thing you can do is get out of shape and have a soft tissue injury and miss a paycheck and miss the opportunity to play in a game. Because I think we'll see that quite a bit, Albert, in terms of we'll see players test on a Friday, let's say, and games just be really weird in terms of teams' depth being tested in ways they never thought of.
Do you have any good stories of like having needed somebody on short notice where maybe you called them in on a Friday and they were able to turn around and actually do something for you on Sunday?
Yeah, I mean, we've had to bring in guys, absolutely. And you tell them like, hey, you know, you got one day to get ready. And that's happened. It doesn't happen as often now because of the way the practice squads have been expanded, but going back a number of years, it does happen.
So like, and that's just like, is the guy generally somebody you've already had in, like, because so they have an idea, like, so generally in that sort of situation, you'd want somebody who already had the background of having worked there before, so they're not starting from zero.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it's typically that someone knows the system, or, you know, we had one year where we were going to be in the playoffs and our seed was locked in, and we had Brad Smith play quarterback, something he had not done in a couple of years. You know, just things come up out of the blue that, you know, you just got to be prepared for. And again, sometimes trades, like, you're counting on a guy, he comes in, he fails physical. So, you know, over the years, all those things happen to, you know, varying degrees.
So I want to get to that too. Like, what do you think the trade market will be like? Because, like, my understanding is, having talked to some guys, it's been pretty quiet, at least up until now. And a lot of the calls are sort of like, you know, oh, we're heavy here, or where are you heavy? Where are you light? And it's just, it almost feels like teams are sort of playing footsie with each other right now. Like, do you think it's going to be a slower trade market because teams do need the depth, and because maybe a guy that you saw as dispensable 2 years ago, you know, you're worried that, like, you're going to lose X, Y, or Z player and then you might need him. Do you think it's going to be a little slower this year?
No, I think we're going to see, you know, player for player. I think we're going to see needs for needs all line up again. So I would tell you that, it may be quiet now, Albert, but one thing is, like, that's a million miles from Saturday. So I think we're going to see a number of trades, and it's all, again, this time of year, Albert, it's all based on need. And when we see player for player trades, it's, hey, can I fill a need? Can you fill a need? You know, the other thing we've seen, and it, we just saw most recently with the Kalen Ballage trade, which ironically was voided, but, you know, it was flipping a fifth for a fourth for the player. I think we're going to see things like that as well. So it may be quiet today, but I would think if you and I are having this conversation in a week, we're going to see a lot more trade activity.
So how would that work then? Like, just give people an idea how that works. Like, when you have a player you know you're going to cut, is it just, all right, I'm going to go through the Rolodex and I'm going to call everybody?
Yeah, and basically you want to do, like, the back half of the claim period. So it would be, like, team 17 through 32 and say, hey, you know, we're thinking about cutting player X. Player X is never going to get to you in the claiming order because for the first three games, the order is based on the draft order. So yeah, this player will never get to you. We'll take a you know, seventh round pick next year, and you know you have the player.
Okay. All right. I want to wrap up with you now. I like on something that's obviously a little more serious than what we've been talking about. Obviously, over the last week, you know, the social justice initiatives across the league have kind of been moved back onto center stage because of, you know, what happened in Kenosha. And we had teams canceling practice last week, obviously, in the NBA and baseball because they are playing games. Some games were canceled. You know, and Mike, you were obviously in Miami with Kenny Stills and with Mike Thomas. And so you guys were sort of one of the, I guess, one of the epicenters of the activity from players. Yeah, I think my biggest question for you on this, you know, just somebody who's been through it and who's seen it, what do you think the players want? Like, you know, you hear a lot over the last few days about how, you know, the owners have to be careful and, you know, how, you know, players would be willing to sit out a game to make a statement. What do you think, from your experience, players are looking for from the owners right now?
You know, Albert, I think at the end of the day, it's really about making meaningful change. And obviously, you know, 2020 has been a challenging year in a lot of ways, obviously with COVID. But with that said, I think a lot of the conversation and activities around bringing a heightened sense of all these issues to the surface were very necessary. And I think we want to make sure that, you know, because of that, there's actionable items. So when we look back in 6 months, a year, or even 5 years, that we could say, you know, a lot of good came out of those conversations and all the discussions we've had around social injustice were meaningful and productive. And I think there's a healthy relationship right now between the league and the union, you know, as evidenced by a 10-year CBA, which was negotiated in February, which candidly feels like a million years ago. But yeah. I think if they get in a room and say, what can we do collectively with this incredible platform that's meaningful, not, you know, just showing up on a Tuesday, which is typically the player's day off, or, you know, a photo shoot, which, let's face it, over the years, a lot of people have done. What can we meaningfully do in communities to have, like, impactful, long-lasting change? And there's a lot of ways to do that. And obviously we're seeing that with, you know, new voting centers, maybe having, you know, the entire league off on election day, which I think is fantastic because, you know, players are such incredible role models that, you know, if they put the emphasis on voting, like, the permutations of that could be, you know, very significant and very productive. So I think things are certainly going in the right direction. I think we've seen, you know, the narrative become much more mainstream. It's become much more, to me, like, it's had great staying power. Like, it's, and I think it's really necessary what we're having these conversations about. So hopefully, you know, the legacy of this period of time in 2020 will be, again, that the programs that are put in place are meaningful and they actually create change that can impact, you know, society for the better.
What was the biggest thing you learned being around Kenny and Mike through that time?
You know, I just think anytime you're in a position of leadership is just try to be a good listener and you try to understand where people are coming from, players are coming from. And, you know, obviously this is an issue that a lot of players, including those that you mentioned, were very passionate about, and you try to listen and address their concerns the best you can.
All right. He's Mike Tannenbaum, former Jets GM, former Dolphins executive, and former Needham Times paperboy. Mike, really appreciate you coming out.
Thank you, Albert. Great to be with you. Really appreciate it.
All right. Thanks to Mike. Like I said, we go way back. He's always a fantastic guest. We're going to jump right into Six Pack. You guys know how this works. Every week, I put the call for questions out on Twitter. I pick six. If I pick yours, you get a like. That means I hit that little heart emoji, the little heart button on Twitter, and you get an answer here on the podcast. Question number one, this is from Con. That's at @C_Mahoney23. Most ideal landing spot for Leonard Fournette and now Alvin Kamara. I got to Fournette earlier. We now know, by the way, that he has cleared waivers. So they're, it's going to be up to him where he wants to go. I believe that going to a place like Pittsburgh would be perfect for him. Chicago, Green Bay, both those teams have former coordinators of him, So there is the natural connection there. Pittsburgh makes a ton of sense to me. I'd love to see what he would look like in black and gold. And again, there's the blueprint there. It's how they were able to sort of revive Jerome Bettis's career. I think he can do something similar with Fournette. As for Kamara, I mean, to me, like an ideal landing spot for Kamara would be a place like Tampa. And I don't think they would trade him there. But man, would that be fun to see him with the Bucs with all of the weaponry they have there. I think the Bucs would probably be willing to give up a first round pick to get him, but I don't think they trade him in division. So most ideal landing spot, Tampa. Maybe a more realistic one if you're going to trade him out of conference, somewhere like Indianapolis maybe. I mean, they have Jonathan Taylor now. Maybe that would be one that would be interesting. It'll be interesting to see what happens. Question number two is from Fenton. That's at @CFenton23. If you had to pick a starting quarterback for this year only, Josh Allen, Sam Darnold, or Baker Mayfield? I would take Baker Mayfield. I think he's the most evolved of the three quarterbacks. I think he's the most accurate of the three quarterbacks. And I like his college production over the other two. I also like the situation that he's in. I know we're not, and I don't think your question is really related to that, but the situation that he's in right now, getting two new starting tackles, who I think can play, and Jedrick Wills and Jack Conklin, I think really helps. So of those three right now, today, for this year, I would take Baker Mayfield because I think he's the most evolved guy. I think he's the most accurate guy. And I think he's the most ready to win for you today. Question number three from Matt Ramos. That's at @Matt_Ramos. How will teams manage their own locker rooms this year with so many people being in a confined place? Will they stagger access between offense and defense, training and medical staff, skill position players? Matt, what they've done, they've set up auxiliary locker rooms. A lot of the teams that are already in their stadiums have actually split their 90-man roster or 80-man roster up between the home locker room, the visiting locker room. I know the Texans are using the cheerleading locker room. You're going to see sort of that sort of use of space. The media won't be in the locker room this year, at least to start, and I think probably for the entire year. Locker room access was, again, in the new protocols, cut down. So the number of people that are allowed in the locker room is very small. I'm not sure even the owners are going to be allowed in the locker rooms. So that's going to be a very – A, they're going to spread – players out as much as they can be. They're very much going to limit it who can actually go in there. Question number four. This is from Jason Scott @Rabbit O Jag. Jags leadership, Caldwell Marone, making moves as if they've been told they are safe to tear it down, tank for Trevor and reset. Is this the case? Why blow it up if you won't be there for the rebuild? That's a great question, Jason. I do think that it's the one thing that I like when I look at this. You know, I sort of think to myself, God, like, I wonder if they have insurances and that the whole idea is to make a run at having a high pick and getting the long-term quarterback next year. Because I do think from an asset management standpoint, they've done okay. They got two first-round picks for Jalen Ramsey. They actually hadn't gotten a hard offer for a second-round pick before the offer for Ngakoue had come along. So they waited it out and wound up getting a better offer in the end than they had initially had for Yannick Ngakoue. They were able to trade Calais Campbell, who's obviously an older player and probably wouldn't be playing anymore when they get good again. So just as far as, you know, they got something for AJ Boye. As far as asset management, I don't mind what they've done. I do think that there's that question there about, you know, whether or not they've gotten, now I don't think they have assurances passed this year. I think it's very much could be the plan that they've sold the ownership on. If you say to them, listen, we need to tear this thing down, and maybe you're convincing owners that like, hey, this is the right thing to do. And you're bad enough to get a quarterback, but the young players that you've drafted and brought into the building, guys like Josh Allen and DJ Chark and Kayvon Chaisson and CJ Henderson, like guys like that wind up showing enough promise where you show them on one side, we're ready to get our quarterback and we're ready to load up and we've got all these assets. And on the other side, and you've been bad enough to be in that position. And then on the other side, you do have some ascending young talent, which would cause them maybe to trust you to use those draft picks. Question number five from D-Train. That's at Hey D-Train. Do you ever feel, and I picked this question specifically because I thought it was a question that people would think I wouldn't answer. Hey, do you ever feel a twinge of any remorse when you look back at all your awful Kaepernick takes, especially now in this moment? D-Train, I would tell you this. I've learned a lot over the last few years. And that's from talking to people, from listening to people, from going back and asking questions of my childhood friends. I feel like I've come some distance over the last few years, and learning and getting a deeper understanding, and feeling better and feeling empathy, for people around me, particularly the people I grew up with, some of the people I grew up with. So I do think that, I've changed and evolved over the last 3 or 4 years. I don't know that I had a whole lot of takes on what I said about Kaepernick back then. That I was doing reporting, and my reporting showed that there were reasons football involved, and there were reasons outside of football why he wound up staying on the market and remaining available and not getting signed. And I certainly think that was part of it. And the point I had made back then was, if this was Aaron Rodgers or Cam Newton at the time or somebody like that, then they wouldn't have lost their job. And if they had been available, they would have been snapped up right away. And it's all about, so much of this is sort of what you bring with you is relative to how good a player you are, and how good a player you are means you can bring more with you. And, we saw this with Tim Tebow. Tim Tebow sort of brought a circus with him. And so that was why he sat out on the market for so long in certain circumstances, was because if he's your starting quarterback, you're willing to take on a lot to bring in the guy. But if it's your backup, a lot of times teams will say, let me get that guy over there who isn't bringing anything extra with him, who's just going to blend in with the furniture. That was the whole point I made the whole time. And I would stand by that. That was just reporting. That was, me talking to the people in the league and figuring out, okay, why is this happening? So I feel like I've learned a ton. And I know more now than I knew 3 or 4 years ago. And I hope that I'm better able to feel empathy, and better able to grasp what other people are going through and how difficult this is for so many people. And hopefully, my whole thing is I want to be an ally. But the stuff from 3 or 4 years ago, all of that was reporting, which is my job. Question number six from Cali Jets fan. That's at Cali Jets. I understand Joe Douglas has a long-term plan, but he did a poor job at the receiver and inside interior offensive line positions. Walk me through his mindset if you can. Just don't get how you let a potential franchise QB go out and get his ass kicked for a big developmental third year. Cali, here's what I would tell you. I do think there were some limits on how much they can spend this offseason. And I think that the idea has been all along to build up the offensive line first and build up the defensive front first and then build out from there. If you look at the places he's been, Philadelphia and Baltimore primarily, he was in Chicago for a year. What the way they build in those places is through the lines of scrimmage. And so I think the whole idea here, Mekhi Becton, George Fant, going and getting guys like that and building up the lines of scrimmage, the idea is you're trying to give your quarterback the best chance by taking some of the pressure off of him. And if you want to look at the quarterbacks who've broken out over the last 3 years, the second-year quarterbacks, what do they all have in common? They all played behind great offensive lines and all had really strong tackle play. It's true of Carson Wentz with Lane Johnson and Jason Peters. It was true of Patrick Mahomes with Mitch Schwartz and Eric Fisher. And it was true of Lamar Jackson last year with Ronnie Stanley and Orlando Brown. So I think the idea is that you don't build Rome in a day and you're starting to build out now. And so, you're building from the inside out. That means you're starting on those lines of scrimmage, and that's what Joe Douglas is doing. I also don't think that Sam Darnold walked on to the same sort of close to finish situation that those other three guys did. Carson Wentz walked into a better situation And so did Patrick Mahomes. So did Lamar Jackson. Sam Darnold's, you know, kind of in this situation where there's a little more building required around him, which makes it more difficult for the Jets to take advantage of him being on his rookie contract. Appreciate you guys coming out. Always, always, always listen to all of our podcasts. And we got news this week that the podcast feeds are going to be split up. So I'm going back to my old podcast feed. We're going to be doing multiple podcasts for you a week. We're going to tweak the show. So now more than ever, I need all of your feedback, right? So please, please, please get me your feedback on my social media channels. It's at Albert Breer on Twitter, at Albert R. Breer on Facebook, at Albert _ Breer on Instagram. You can get to me there. We are going to incorporate stuff that's going to be evolving. We're going to have a fantasy segment. Gresh is going to be part of the show. We're going to have guests. We're going to do a lot of different stuff. And so I want to hear what you want to hear so we can incorporate it into the show. And, you know, again, keep listening to Jenny and Connor's Weekside podcast. Keep listening to Gary's podcast. We'll be on three separate feeds now. And you'll be able to find all of those three feeds where you find all of your podcasts. Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, wherever you guys get your shows, we'll be there. Same time next week. I'll see you guys then.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
You want the best for your child. K-12 can help them gain the skills they need to reach their full potential while giving you the support you need to get them there. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Their state-certified teachers make online learning interactive and engaging, allowing your child to learn at their pace from the safety of home. Join the more than 3 million families who have chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.